Very sweet night indeed. You did fine, Pops. You did just fine. 24. I never did make it to bed that night. Instead, I bought a fifth of rock gut for inspiration, went to my office and drew large circles on a piece of paper. Into each circle I put either a name or a fact. Some of the names overlapped each other, and so did some of the facts. Some of the names overlapped some of the facts, and some of the facts overlapped some of the names. No answers came of it. I wound up punchy from lack of sleep and with a headache to boot. Who was I kidding, anyway? Analytical cogitation never had been my strong suit. I function best when the solution to a case requires a direct, physical approach. It might never win me a turn as king of beasts, but at least it gets me my own small, jackal-free corner of the jungle. What more could any snake in the grass want? I scooped my fruitless evening exercise into the wastebasket just as old Mr. Sun bade me good morning and started his trek across the sky. Must be boring for the big yellow galoot, doing the same job day in, day out, but at least he always knows where he's headed. That's more than I could say for a certain private eye of my acquaintance. Scrubbing off my face left such a dark ring around the office sink that I dared to hope I might have scoured off the circles under my eyes, but no such luck. I hauled out my razor and upped my record for most shaves on a single blade. At least this time I managed to stop the bleeding before it attracted vampire bats. I swiped the morning paper from in front of the accountant's office next door, and was just sitting down to a leisurely glass of breakfast when my partner walked in. I couldn't understand it. Even with no rest, the darn rabbit came in perky enough to out-chipper Mary Poppins. I could have gone into insulin shock or suffered permanent eye damage from being exposed to such a heavy dose of sweetness and light. "I didn't expect to find you here this early," said Roger cheerily. "I wanted to get an early start," I answered. The sun shining in my office window lit up the tips of Roger's fur and made him look like a descended angel. Dare I hope that maybe Roger had disintegrated during the night and what I saw before me was Roger's ghost? On second thought, that didn't seem like such a hot prospect. At least I could keep a live Roger at bay by barricading my door. I hated to imagine the pester potential of a Roger rabbit able to walk through walls. I poured myself a second glass of breakfast, and Roger just couldn't leave well enough alone.
"You shouldn't drink this early in the morning," he said. "It's bad for your liver."
His balloon rained down a trail of brimstone halfway across my desk. Ever catch a whiff of brimstone? Pure essence of skunk flower. I pulled out my lighter and ignited the larger of the pullets before they broke. They flared bright yellow and disappeared. "Who appointed you guardian of morals around here?" I said, knocking back my toddy in a single swallow. "How about you watch your liver and I'll watch mine?"
"However you want it," he said peevishly. "I'm only concerned for your welfare."
"You earned your keep last night?"
"Indeed I did."
The rabbit set down a Piggly Wiggly grocery sack, from which he extracted enough carrots to bring everybody in the building up to 20/20 vision. He ran them through his front teeth the way lumberjacks run redwoods through a sawmill.
Zing, zing, zing.
I visited a few all-night bookstores, but none of them had any reference books detailed enough to help me identify the writing on the scroll. So I planned to check out the public library as soon as it opened this morning. That's when I got an incredible stroke of luck. On my way to the library, I passed a Persian falafel shop. They had a big sign out front listing all their sandwiches in English, and a smaller sign with the same list in Persian. That smaller sign stopped me cold. Why? Because, are you ready for this? I noticed a distinct similarity between the Persian menu and the writing on the scroll. The rabbit grinned so broadly that the next carrot he sent to oblivion fit into his cross sideways. I waited until the shop opened, went inside, and showed the owner our scroll. I asked him if it was written in Persian. He said yes, although it was a rather quaint, old dialect, and he couldn't read it. He said he had an elderly uncle who lived with him who might be able to translate it for us. I don't think I ever met anybody who dragged out a story as much as this rabbit.
I doubt I could have shoved his narrative along any faster with a bulldozer, but I gave it a shot.
So what did it say?
I don't know.
You mean the uncle couldn't translate it?
No. I mean the uncle wasn't awake yet. I left it there with the owner, and he promised to show it to his uncle as soon as the old man woke up.
I couldn't believe my ears.
Roger, you idiot. I paid 100 smackaroos for a scroll that you left at a Persian deli?
Suppose that scroll turns out to be valuable, and the deli owner decides to keep it for himself.
Suppose when you go back for it, the guy tells you he accidentally stuffed it full of sprouts and sold it as a sandwich. What do you do then, Mr. Sam Spade Reborn?
That knocked the smart-alecky rabbit down a peg or two. He sucked in his mouth so far his nose almost disappeared.
Gee, Eddie, you want me to go back right now and get it?
I shook my head. No, don't bother. The damage is done. If the deli owner's going to diddle us out of it, there's not much we can do to stop him.
I really am awfully sorry, Eddie.
Everything the rabbit had that could slump, slumped. His shoulders, his ears, his nose, even his eyebrows. I came around to his side of my desk and punched him a hearty tap on the arm. Hey, brighten up. What kind of a detective would you be if you didn't screw up every now and then?
You mean it?
A few parts of him unslumped. Sure. Even me, your supposedly infallible mentor, has been known to blow it a time or two.
I don't believe it.
It's true.
Tell me one time.
Maybe later. In truth, I couldn't remember a time. But I had the rabbit pretty well pumped up by then, and I didn't want to go through the process again. Right now, I've got something more important to discuss with you. You ever hear of a guy named Sid Sleaze? The rabbit snapped back into the proper spirit. The way he talked, his mannerisms, his stance. I swear if I squinted, I couldn't have told him from a fuzzy, long-eared Humphrey Bogart.
Yes, I know him. A no-good through and through. A human publisher of toon pornography.
A human? With a name like that? A hard knot of stringy words squeezed through the eye-hole of Roger's needle-thin mouth.
Sleaze is his professional name. His real name is Sid Baumgartner. He once published a line of comics illustrating the classics and was a pretty good Joe to work for. He gave a lot of people their first big break. In fact, I believe Carol Masters got her start working for Baumgartner. Then a few years back, when people lost interest in the classics, Baumgartner went bankrupt. He resurfaced as Sid Sleaze and made a fortune. Why the interest in him?
Isn't there something about his name that strikes you as being rather important? His initials, maybe? A marquee's worth of light bulbs went on over Roger's head.
Double S? Sure, Double S. You mean Rocco wrote those checks of his to Sid Sleaze?
Looks that way.
What on earth for?
The perfect copycat. Roger took a chair, spun it around, and straddled it the way I do. He might not have the substance of detecting, but he was sure getting a good handle on the form. That's what we have to find out. Did you ever have any dealings with Sleaze? Did he ever approach you or anybody you know to star in any of his hotsy-totsy stuff? The rabbit gave me a no-nonsense nod. The energy-efficient variety, down and up, one time, quick.
He talked to me once. He said he could do a lot in his line with a rabbit. He told me he would dude me up in a tux, promote me as a randy playboy, and turn me into a millionaire. I told him no soap. I told him to find some other bunny willing to debase himself. I didn't want any part of it.
How about Jessica? Sleaze ever approach her? The rabbit's cast-iron front cracked open, and I caught a glimpse of the old familiar mush bag underneath.
"Probably," said Roger. "At one time or another, Sleaze has propositioned just about everybody in the business. But Jessica would never do such a thing. She's too much of a lady."
I could feel lewd, crude, and in the mood smoldering inside my jacket pocket. I should have shown it to him. Shown him what a tramp he had married. But I couldn't.
deducted from my income tax as this month's charitable contribution. I heard somebody enter my adjoining waiting room. I opened the connecting door a crack and peeked in to see none other than Jessica Rabbit. Speak of the devil. Roger pleaded with me to let him stick around when I talked to her, but I told him nothing doing. She'd see through his flimsy disguise in a minute. I told him to go out the window and down the fire escape, go to my apartment, and wait for me there. He wasn't tickled at the prospect, but he did it anyway. I opened the outer door and invited Jessica in. 25. She swept into my office the way a touring British queen would enter a bushman's hut, head high, stiff upper lip, determined to maintain proper imperial bearing, but very, very careful not to breathe too deeply of the foul air or stray too near the mud-caked walls. She wore a casual outfit, blue jeans, T-shirt, and tennis shoes. If she was dressing down to my level, I hope she brought her pick and shovel, because she still had 3 miles deeper to go. I offered her a chair. The regal way she carried herself made me want to dust off the seat cushion first, but my only handkerchief is the one my dry cleaner stuffs in my breast pocket whenever I get my suit pressed, and it's no more than a half inch of material stapled to a piece of cardboard. She accepted my offer of an eye-opener, but when I poured her 3 good fingers, she barely sucked the thumb. "To what do I owe this unexpected pleasure?" I asked. She turned heavy sighing into an athletic event worthy of feature coverage in Sports Illustrated. "I want to hire you," she said, "as a private detective." She lit a cigarette and looked around for an ashtray, but there are none, since I routinely use the floor. I dug out an old coffee cup, one with "I'm proud to be a tune" written on it, with "tune" misspelled about 6 times, and shoved it across the desk at her. She read the inscription, smiled, and dropped her burnt match onto the rug. "Mind telling me what exactly it is you want me to do?" She crossed one exquisite leg over the other and tapped her foot against the thick, invisible wall between us. "Since Roger was killed, I've been visited several times by a certain police captain named Cleaver. Are you familiar with him?" I nodded. I poured myself her second drink, since it looked like she'd never get around to it, and I hate to see booze spoil. "I don't think it's any great secret that Cleaver considers me the prime suspect in Roger's murder. I came to you because I want you to get me off." I wished I had a month to really think this one out. I wished I had contacts in high places who could supply me with inside info. I wished I had a mind Machiavellian enough to give Jessica Rabbit a run for her money. But most of all, I wished I had some ice, because this warm bourbon was starting to do me more harm than good. "Rather an odd choice of words you picked there, missy. You mean you want me to prove you didn't do it, don't you? Asking me to get you off makes it sound like you're guilty as charged, like you did kill Roger exactly as Cleaver says you did." She backpedaled faster than a bicycle rider careening toward a washed-out bridge. "Yes, of course, you're right. That's what I meant. I want you to prove me innocent. I just got my words twisted around. What I meant was that I want you to find out who really killed Roger." "If I do that, if I take your case, you'll assist me however you can? You'll tell me the absolute truth about your involvement with this affair?" Her head bobbed up and down like a line float with a firm hook on an angelfish. "Okay. Let's start with your alibi. Is it true that you spent the entire evening alone, at a movie, and out for a walk?" Had she not suppressed her thought balloons, the air above her head would have been filled with visions of churning gears. I could picture the pasteboard card flopping out the tiny slot at the far end. "You weigh 115 pounds. You're tall and gorgeous. Everybody lusts after you, and if you want to stay out of the slammer, you have no choice but to tell this nasty man what really happened on that fatal night."
"I went to a movie. That much is true. But I didn't go for a walk afterward. I went straight home. I got there at least an hour before Rocco died.
You mean you were actually in the house when it happened? She lit a new cigarette off the butt of an old one, just like you'd see any ordinary B-girl do in any ordinary juke joint on any ordinary night of the week, except when Jessica did it, she made it seem extraordinary, as exotic and exciting as watching a jeweler cutting diamonds or a gunsmith engraving steel. She wrapped her lips seductively around the filter tip and sucked rhythmically, making her cigarette darken and glow in a pattern that spelled out temptation in her seductive private code.
Yes, not only was I in the house at the time, I saw the murderer.
I suddenly felt like one of those milk bottles people whack with softballs at a local county fair. Just when you get settled into a good, solid, upright stance, somebody plunks down two bits and knocks you flat on your keister. Who might that murderer be? The graceful way she tilted her head would have been an excellent subject for a charm school student's doctoral dissertation.
I thought you already knew.
Refresh my memory.
Why, it was Roger, of course.
Of course. Had it been anybody else, this case would have been duck soup, and heaven forbid that Eddie Valiant should ever have a case handed to him on a silver platter. Tell me what you saw. She detailed her story in the flat, unworldly voice that floats around the edges of a séance.
I was in my bedroom, giving my hair 200 strokes, when I heard a shot. I went running into the hallway to the top of the staircase. From there I had a clear view of Rocco's study below. I saw the door open, and I saw Roger come charging out, a smoking gun in his paw.
He didn't see you?
No. He was in too big a hurry to get away. He went straight out the front door and down the sidewalk.
Still holding the gun?
Still holding the gun.
You didn't see anybody else come out after him?
No.
She walked to the window and inhaled some of the loose weave gray flannel that substitutes for fresh air in this burg.
I went into the study and saw what had happened, that Roger had shot Rocco dead. I immediately went back to my room, dressed, got into my car, and drove to Roger's bungalow.
Why do that? Why not just call the cops?
She gave me a look hard enough to hammer nails into my forehead. I planned to use what I knew to blackmail Roger.
For what? What could the rabbit have that you could want?
She sat down on the edge of my desk, leaned toward me, and whispered the week's worst-kept secret. Why, his tea kettle, naturally. I wanted his tea kettle.
Why didn't you get it from him when you were still living together? He would have given you anything, especially an old tea kettle.
She returned to her chair. I didn't feel such a compulsion to dust it for her this time, not after the ton of dirt she had dished around my office. I didn't find out how valuable it was until after I'd left him. I couldn't ask him for it then because I feared he might promise to give it to me only if I returned to him.
And you wouldn't have done that?
Not even for the tea kettle. I already told you that rabbit's a turkey.
To my eternal credit, I let that one slide. What is it about this tea kettle that makes it such a hot item in your book? Exactly how valuable is it?
She closed her eyes and launched into a tale fantastic enough to provide a 6-month scenario for Terry and the Pirates. In the early 10th century, a dying gourmet potentate wanted to provide for his royal chef. So he had the palace artisan construct for him a solid gold tea kettle inlaid with a single huge blue-white diamond and a multitude of other slightly smaller but equally precious stones. Several hundred years later, this priceless tea kettle fell into the hands of the Templar Knights. You've heard of the Templar Knights?
Sure. They came right after the Templar days.
She dismissed my sarcasm with a crinkle of her nose. The Templar knights fought for Richard the Lionhearted. They claimed the tea kettle for themselves during one of their grand crusades to the Holy Land. To protect it from thieves on the journey home, the Templar knights disguised it by having it lacquered gray. As fate would have it, thieves stole it anyhow, although as nearly as historians can tell, they had no inkling as to its true worth. To them, it was nothing but a common tea kettle. That's the last record we have of it, until it turned up on Roger's stove.
How did you find out about it? Was it Rocco who told you? I understand he'd been studying up on mythology lately. Was this why? Because he was hot on the trail of the Caliph's tea kettle?
She lit a third cigarette and shooed the smoke away from her face with a hand as delicate as any Japanese fan.
Yes, precisely. He first saw it in a still photo taken from the Alice in Wonderland movie. He remembered it from a sketch he had seen years ago while researching a strip on the Arabian Nights. He went out and bought a ton of mythology books and searched through them for every reference to the Caliph's tea kettle. He found enough to become convinced that it really existed and that what Roger had matched its description perfectly. I learned about it one night when I heard Rocco and his brother Dominic discussing how to get their hands on it. Roger hated and distrusted them, so they couldn't offer to buy it outright. Roger had that complicated burglar alarm system, so they couldn't break in and steal it. When I overheard them, they were just coming around to the prospect of murder.
They intended to kill the rabbit? For his tea kettle?
So they said.
What happened when you got to Roger's house?
I found the door open. I went inside and saw Roger dead. I looked around, but the tea kettle was nowhere to be found. I figured that Dominic had probably beaten me to it. So I left. That's how it happened.
She crossed her heart and hoped to die.
The truth.
Why didn't you report it that way?
She displayed another side of herself, the confused innocent.
I was afraid. I didn't want to get involved with murder. Leave it to that stupid bunny to die with my name on his lips and rope me in anyway.
When you entered the house, and when you left it again, did you notice some music coming from out of the piano?
Yes, I did. That's what held the door open. The music had gotten wrapped around the knob. I don't remember what the song was, if that's what you're after.
That's what I'm after.
Well, I don't remember.
She leaned forward far enough across the desk to put her hand on my arm. In an earlier, more direct era, that kind of touch would have been all I needed to grab her by the hair, drag her into my cave, and ravage her until morning. Nowadays, we have to be satisfied with a silly grin. I gave her a silly grin.
I did not kill Roger, she said. You must believe that. I swear it on my honor.
That's a pretty shaky oath in my book. I pitched her my beanball. Ever hear of a man named Sid Sleaze?
Her hand tightened around my arm, but she didn't seem to have enough strength in it to squash a cockroach.
Yes, I know him. He asked me to appear in a porno comic book once. He hounds most of the top tunes. He's a filthy, perverted beast, and I wouldn't have anything to do with him.
You never gave in and appeared in one of his goodies?
Of course not. What kind of woman do you take me for? I have my standards.
There was only one reply to that. I pulled out Lewd, Crude, and In the Mood, and threw it on the desk.
She stared down at the printed goody, the way an innocent bystander stares at a body which has just fallen 10 stories to the sidewalk.
Where did you get this?
From a book dealer I know. It cost me a bundle. I must say it's worth every penny.
You naughty girl, you.
She reached for it, but I quickly hauled it back and stuffed it into my top desk drawer. She uncorked a stream of tears that would have made a crocodile proud.
I was trying to break into modeling when I first met Sid Sleaze, she said. He passed himself off as a big-time movie producer. He told me he would make me a star. Some star. He invited me to his apartment and slipped me a spiked drink that left me able to function physically, but made me totally uninhibited. When the effects wore off, Sleaze showed me prints of the porno material he had shot on me while I was under. The same stuff he later used to prepare that horrid book. He gave me $5,000 and told me there would be a lot more in it for me if I did it again, of my own free will this time. I threw the money at him and ran out.
Did you go to the cops?
I was afraid to, and embarrassed. I was only 18 at the time. Besides, while I was drugged, Sleaze had me sign a formal release. Luckily, Sleaze printed up only a small quantity of those comics. This was when he was first getting started in the business, and he couldn't afford a large press run. After I became famous, and he realized what a potential gold mine he had, he approached me again, shortly after I married Roger. He said if I didn't give him money, he would print up another 100,000 copies for general release.
She brought her cigarette up between us and watched it burn. What did you do?
She killed her smoke by grinding it viciously into my cup. She kept grinding it long after it had gone out, until nothing remained except loose strands of tobacco and thoroughly shredded paper.
I paid him, naturally. What else could I do? I had my career to consider. Luckily for me, Sleaze proved to be a lot more honorable as a crook than he was as a porno producer. Once he had his money, he gave me the negatives, exactly as promised.
He gave you the negatives?
That's right.
What did you do with them?
I cut them into tiny pieces and flushed them down the toilet.
Did Rocco ever see them? Or see the comic?
No, never. It's hardly a subject I'd discuss with a man who worshipped me as the embodiment of sophistication.
As she talked, Jessica came around to my side of the desk, took up a position behind my chair, and ran her fingers through my hair and along the side of my face.
"You have beautiful features," she said, "so strong and well-defined."
"Chipped out of granite. That's me."
She brushed a kiss across my ear.
"You will take my case, won't you?"
she said in a throaty whisper that spoke of pleasures rarely experienced by the common man.
"Not a chance," I whispered back, a lot less heartily than I had intended to. Her voice shot up like a rocket. "What do you mean, not a chance?" "Just what I said. I won't take your case."
I held her lovely hand in mine and ticked off my reasons on her slender fingers.
"First, I think you're lying about seeing Roger coming out of Rocco's study after the shooting. Why? I don't know. Maybe to protect somebody else, maybe to cover yourself. Secondly, for once in my life I agree 100% with the police. I think you shot Roger. I'd stake my life on it. You had the tea kettle for a motive, and you had the opportunity. Thirdly, I won't take your case because I already have a client. Roger Rabbit, dead though he may be." I ran out of reasons before I ran out of fingers, so I took the two of hers I had remaining and squeezed them together. "And these two little piggies went to the gas chamber," I said. She jerked her hand away and hid it behind her where I couldn't intimidate it any more.
"You're wrong. You're terribly wrong. I've told you the truth. I beg you to reconsider."
Again, I told her no dice. She cried me another half a river as I shooed her into the hall. No sooner had she gone than I heard a noise outside my window, like somebody stumbling over their own feet as they descended the fire escape. I jerked the window open, but found nobody there. Down at the bottom of the iron escape ladder, on the street, I did see Roger Rabbit, though. Strange. He should have been halfway to my apartment by now. Could it be he stayed behind and eavesdropped on my conversation with Jessica? If so, he knew my true feelings toward her. Even worse, he knew her true feelings toward him. And right now I didn't think the little guy could handle it. For his sake, I hoped he had been far, far away when Jessica told her tale. But, knowing Snoopy Roger, fat chance of that. I prescribed myself one final bracer, and set resolutely off to face the morose scene I knew I'd find at home. 26. When I got home, I found the rabbit crawling around the living room on all fours. For a delicious moment, I thought he might have regressed to his wild state. But it turned out he had only dropped his contact lens, a plate glass oval large enough to double as serving platter for roast squab. He buffed it on his sleeve and popped it into his eye. But I don't think it improved his perspective any, since his face remained as sour as a dill pickle and nearly as green. "Want to talk about it?" I asked. He shook his head so vigorously that his ears wound around each other. I had to step on his foot to keep him from helicoptering off the floor. "It might help," I said. He shambled into the living room and collapsed on the sofa. He curled his fingers into a fist and wrapped one of the cushions his best lick. Some puncher. With a right cross that week, I wouldn't back him in a match against Joe Palooka's thumb.
"What does she mean, I'm a turkey?"
he blurted out in a balloon the size and consistency of a squishy honeydew. So he had been eavesdropping, after all. "Maybe she called you a turkey because you gobble your food." A pretty good joke, I thought, but it left old Yucca Minute stone cold. Tunes. You figure out what tickles their fancy, because I sure can't.
"Somebody put those words in her mouth," he said. "She would never talk about me that way of her own accord."
Right. The fly on the wall was a ventriloquist.
"Don't joke about it," he snorted.
Ever hear a rabbit snort? Imagine an effeminate donkey with bad adenoids.
"I'm very upset by what I heard."
"You shouldn't have eavesdropped."
"I'm a private detective now. It's part of my job."
"Then you'll just have to learn to roll with it. Remember, people who peek through keyholes have to expect an occasional poke in the eye." The rabbit got up, stood in front of the window, and absorbed enough mellow morning sunlight to cast a shadow of his former self.
"Was that one of those gems of folk wisdom we detectives throw out with such proficiency?"
"Call me the old philosopher."
"The only old philosopher I remember wound up with a gutful of hemlock."
"Maybe he should have stuck to a bland diet." The rabbit threw up his paws in surrender. "Match, set, and championship to yours truly." Roger dropped a small milky white balloon to the floor and bonked it across the carpet with his big toe.
"What was the comic you and Jessica were talking about?"
he asked, rather idly considering the grave implications of my answer.
"And how does Sid Sleaze fit into it?"
If he wanted sugarcoating, the rabbit picked the wrong candy apple. I laid it out for him complete, in every detail. The comic is a racy number called Lewd, Crude, and In the Mood. It's 8 pages long and shows Jessica making whoopee. You heard Jessica's version of how it came to be? The part of it that interests me isn't the book itself, but rather the book's negatives. Jessica says she bought the negatives from Sleaze shortly after you were married and destroyed them. Yet I found a piece of those same negatives in Rocco's fireplace, which means that Sleaze sold either Jessica or Rocco a copy.
"Impossible."
The rabbit shook his head emphatically enough to put a spin on his next balloon. I had to slow it to a stop by dragging my finger across it before I could read it.
"I don't see how he could have sold either of them a copy," it said. "A copy negative always comes out slightly fuzzy and easy to spot. I can recognize one easily, so I'm sure both Jessica and Rocco could, too."
The rabbit spoke his next words staring straight up at the ceiling, so that balloon shot out parallel to the floor. It hit the wall and fell down behind the sofa. Since he had his eyes closed, he was totally oblivious to his balloon's final resting place. I had to snag it with a bent coat hanger and pull it out to see what he had said.
"This comic of Jessica's," it turned out to be. "Show it to me."
"I don't think so. It's as raw as any I've ever seen.
I was certainly having my troubles conversing with the rabbit today. His next balloon came out so faintly written that I had to drag it to within 6 inches of my nose before I could decipher it. "Show it to me." I pulled the comic out of my jacket pocket and handed it over.
"You're the boss."
Roger held it the way people handle a dead mouse, at arm's length, between his first two fingers. Without even glancing at it, he dumped it into my waste can and flipped a lighted match in after it. I broke the record for the 5-yard dash getting across the living room, but still arrived too late. By the time I reached the wastebasket, the comic was nothing but a smoldering ash. It crumbled to dust at my touch. Not so much as a picture or a word remained visible.
"That was a terrifically boneheaded play," I yelled at the sullen bunny. "That comic set me back $200. What did you have to go and torch it for?"
The rabbit stood up on his tiptoes, which brought his eyes just about level with mine.
"You and I have to get something straight," he said.
I prayed for him to poke me in the chest with his finger so I could snap it off and hand it to him wrapped in a hot dog bun, but no such luck. He kept his arms hanging limply at his side.
"There's a fundamental difference in the way we want to conduct this case. I think we'd better resolve it right here and now."
His toes got wobbly, so he put his heels back on the floor, and we continued our discussion eye to chest.
"You're getting paid to prove I didn't kill Rocco," he said, "and to find out who killed me. I didn't hire you to harass my wife, so leave her alone. She's totally innocent."
"She wasn't so innocent when she made that pornographic comic," I reminded him. That got the rabbit back up on his tiptoes.
"You heard what she said. Sleaze gulled her into making that piece of trash. She is not the kind of woman who would do that of her own free will. If she says she was tricked into it, I believe her. I believe everything she says."
"She says she saw you kill Rocco. You believe that too?" Roger waffled so quickly, I could almost taste butter and syrup.
"No, that I don't believe. I suspect she's being pressured to implicate me, possibly by Dominic DeGrisi. He's that kind of rapscallion."
"Okay. Let's suppose for a minute we play it your way. What does that mean I do?"
"Jessica asked you to prove that she didn't kill me. I want you to do just that. I want you to prove whatever she wants proved."
If I'm ever tempted to take a toon case again, I hope somebody puts a bullet through me first. "I can't oblige. I already have you for a client, and it would be unethical for me to take on somebody else." He half shut his eyelids, the way people do when they pass a cripple on the sidewalk.
"From what I heard, ethics never bothered you before. Why the sudden change of heart? Sure, it's 2 clients, but it's also 2 fees.
That illustrates the first rule of detecting. Always wear your shorts snugged up tight, so you don't feel the pain when your client kicks you below the belt.
"You really hurt me with that kind of rotten talk," I protested. "I'm not in this one for the money. I'm in it because I think you're almost an all right guy. For a tune, that is. And I want to see you go out happy."
Here I practically proposed marriage to him, and still he refused to back off.
"Then do what I ask. Take Jessica's case."
I tried to grab him by the shoulders, but my hands slipped down and I wound up shaking sense into him at about the elbow level.
"Damn it, Roger! Don't you understand? Your beloved, sweetie Jessica, who you so badly want me to help, is the one who shot you!"
At this point, any rational being would have given in to logic. That's what makes toons so frustrating. There's not a one of them with the rationality of a dead frog.
"I don't care how incriminating the evidence is against Jessica. I don't care what she said in your office. I don't care what you think about her guilt or innocence. I only know that Jessica loved me and would not have harmed me. If you won't take on 2 clients, drop me and accept her. In fact, I'll go even further than that. Consider yourself fired. As of right this instant, you're off my case." so there's no more conflict for your precious ethics.
I'm sorry, Roger. No go. I'm going to clear your name and bring in your murderer, whether you want me to or not.
Roger huffed and he puffed, but he couldn't blow me down. Not once I had my mind bricked up. Best he could do was to try for a compromise.
Play it your way, then. But if it turns out to be Jessica who killed me, I don't want her punished for it. I want you to get her off the hook. Will you at least humor me that far?
That's about the dopiest thing I've ever heard, I said.
What did you expect from a rabbit? Said Roger. Will you do it my way? If she's guilty, will you get her off?
I'll think about it, I promised. And I did, for maybe half a second, just long enough to picture Jessica Rabbit dangling by her gorgeous neck from the top of the nearest tree.
27. I figured Roger needed a perk up, so I told him to tag along and watch me grill Sid Sleaze. For the amount of enthusiasm he showed for it, I might just as well have asked him to watch me fold my laundry. I don't know. You bend over backward to accommodate these creatures, and you get zippo appreciation for it. No wonder nobody goes out of their way to be nice to them. Where's the percentage in it? The Sleazy Press occupied a steel and glass high-rise surrounded by small, one-story family-owned businesses. Roger and I hadn't gotten 3 feet from the curb before a grandmotherly woman who should have been home in a rocking chair crocheting afghans stuck a petition under my nose, the gist of which was that Sid Slee should be tarred, feathered, and run out of the neighborhood lashed to a rail. She also carried a shopping bag of rotten cabbages to throw at Slee's when he came through the door. When Roger blurted out that we were on our way in to see Slee's up close and personal, she locked my arm in a vice grip and refused to release me until I promised to spit in his eye. I expected Sid Sleaze to be a short, dumpy guy with Vaseline hair, no neck, and an armful of tattooed naked ladies that would do obscene dances when he flexed his muscles. Sporting a day-glow orange suit, a tie that lit up and said, "Kiss me in the dark," a diamond stick pin, and a gold front tooth. Oh, yeah, and with plenty of drool dripping down his chin. At least I got one right. He was short, but as solid and well-proportioned as a bantamweight contender. His dark suit wouldn't have drawn a second glance at a mortician's convention. He walked more gracefully than I danced, and had a melodious baritone that could have charmed the bloomers off the Virgin Queen. Certainly not the slime ball type you walk up to on the street and bop with a rotten cabbage. Needless to say, I didn't spit in his eye. Every stick of furniture in Sleaze's office cried out big bucks. Lamps made out of Chinese vases, an Italian desk old enough to have come across the ocean with Columbus, and leather chairs with enough moxie to keep a solid guy like me from sinking through to the floor. I introduced Roger as my research assistant, and sat him on a chair against the wall far enough away so he didn't cramp my style. Sleaze served us coffee in translucent china cups with handle holes you'd be hard-pressed to stick a pencil through. I made 2 stabs at taking a drink without extending my pinky, failed both times, and finally let my java go cold.
"What can I do for you, Mr. Valiant?" Sleaze asked congenially. "I've talked to many vice squad officers in my days, but never to a private detective. I must say I'm rather intrigued. What would anyone want to privately detect about me? I have absolutely nothing to hide. Lord knows, you only have to look at my comics to realize I have nothing to hide." He laughed heartily and took a sip of coffee. Out went his pinky.
"I'm working on a case involving the cartoon publishing industry, and a mutual friend suggested you might be able to help me. Carol Masters. Remember her? She said it had been quite a while."
Sleaze set his wonderfully modulated voice to work, conveying us on a nostalgic journey backward through time.
"Of course I remember Carol. I provided her with her first break. A hard worker and a terribly talented lady. I've often wished she would come back to work for me now. I've asked her to on numerous occasions, but she turned me down cold."
He plucked a few stray pieces of lint off a sleeve that already looked like he vacuumed it every hour.
Carol told me she won't shoot for the skin trade anymore. And I can't say I blame her. It's a filthy, rotten business, and I grow more disenchanted with it every day. Lately, I've toyed quite seriously with the idea of getting out of it, getting back into mainstream comics again. He settled back in his chair and crossed his feet at the ankles. What specific case is it you're here to see me about, Mr. Valiant?
The Rocco DeGrisi murder. I watched his face for a reaction, but none came.
What exactly is it you want to know?
I went straight for the jugular.
I understand you're responsible for a crassity that Rocco's live-in girlfriend Jessica Rabbit starred in several years ago. Lewd, crude, and in the mood. Remember it?
He smiled the way a proud papa does when discussing his precocious child.
How could I forget my masterpiece, when I still believed it possible to produce quality pornography, before I realized the two terms are mutually exclusive?
Jessica says you shanghaied her into making that comic, that you drugged her and shot it while she was under.
A melancholy sadness crinkled his eyes. I've heard that story before. It's Jessica's way of rationalizing a youthful indiscretion. In truth, there was no need to coerce her with drugs or anything else. She did it quite willingly. For the money, I expect, since she was awfully poor in those days. We shot lewd in my downtown studio in a couple of days. A few months after the comic appeared, she came back and asked to star in another. I would have loved to oblige her, but by then she had acquired a fine sense of her own worth and had escalated her salary demands accordingly. I simply couldn't afford her. So I had to turn her down. I checked Roger's reaction to these revelations concerning the base metal core of his pedestal's ivory statue, but he seemed more interested in getting his thumbs to twiddle. Maybe doppels degenerate from the inside out. Maybe the attention span goes first. So far, I loved it. I'd love it even more if his head fell off.
You later threatened to blackmail Jessica unless she gave you money for the negatives to that comic, I said to Sleaze.
Sleaze spread his hands, so I could see where the spike would go when an inflamed public nailed him unjustly to a cross.
I wouldn't call it blackmail exactly. I'd call it a quid pro quo. She came to me when she needed money. I went to her when I needed money. The only difference was that she wasn't quite as willing to pay me as I had been to pay her. You may not believe this, but I had no intention of following through on my threat to print more copies of that comic. It was pure bluff on my part.
You're right. I don't believe it, I said. You went to see Rocco DeGrisi night before last. What for?
He pushed his brows together over twinkling eyes.
Business. Just business.
Yeah, monkey business. You sold Rocco a set of the same negatives you sold Jessica. Plus, you were the last person to see Rocco DeGrisi alive. Which means you might also have been the first person to see him dead.
The twinkle in his eyes became a worried flicker. I left Rocco alive. I didn't kill him.
Ever see a cop spin a web of circumstantial evidence into a hangman's noose?
No?
Well, I have. And unless you come clean with me, I'll hoof it straight over to the local station house, and the next sound you'll hear will be the pitter-patter of young flatfeet eager to make their reputations by arresting the infamous Sid Sleaze.
Sleaze fingered the pieces of a magnificent carved wooden chess set on the corner of his desk. He tipped over the king and watched to make sure I caught the significance.
What is it you want to know?
For how much did you nick Rocco?
No more glib evasions.
$20,000.
Why did he write you out two separate checks for $10,000 each?
I told him he could buy me off in two installments. One then, one in 6 months. He would get half the negatives each time. When he saw the first batch, he went for the full price up front.
You always let your mark make time payments?
Depends on the circumstances. Naturally, if that's what it takes for maximum return. I'm quite the progressive blackmailer.
I assumed this was his idea of a joke, but I wasn't laughing. I should say so, considering this was the second time you'd sold what were supposed to be one-of-a-kind negatives, once to Rocco, once earlier to Jessica. He displayed the guilty look you see on a 4-year-old kid caught standing beside a broken vase. In actuality, I shot 2 sets of those negatives. The ones I sold Jessica were the ones I used to make the comic. Rocco got the 2nd set. The poses were slightly different from the 1st, but I counted on Rocco's being too disgusted to examine them closely. I was right. The instant he got his hands on them, he gave them a quick once-over and tossed them straight into the fireplace. Caveat emptor, Mr. Valiant. In blackmail, as everywhere else. Did Rocco make any phone calls while you were there?
No.
What time did you leave his place?
I don't know. I didn't...